Good morning. We have been trying in a number of different ways to put the elections in context, to put the Tea Party in context on the Tea Party. Wouldn't you say that? I mean, just trying to grapple with what it all means.
Well, numerically speaking, it's pretty, pretty hard. And I think midterm elections are always difficult because everything's very, very regional. So you can't really figure out the national trend. And, of course, the media is so ubiquitous these days. It's all national message all the time.
That's,
so
that's
that conflicts,
very true.
I think.
But, I mean, there's certain things about the Tea Party that aren't new, that we have seen before. I mean, they're not the first to say that we need to take back the country. They're not the first to say we need to get back to the founding principles of the Constitution. And they're certainly not the first to use Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson as poster boys. They could be the first, though, to transform them into Christian icons.
I sure would like to see more Americans seek that guidance that our founding fathers sought.
Progressives have built up this wall of separation between church and state, and it's nonsense. It's not what we were founded on.
We pursued. We marched on because we knew God was not releasing us to quit.
That is in order, Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, who is not a Tea Partier, and Christine O'Donnell. Joining us now to help us grapple with this connection between the Tea Party and religion is Harvard historian Jill Lepore. She's the author of The Whites of Their Eyes, an examination of the far right's battle to take back America. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So explain to me this connection. Do you feel that the Tea Party at heart is a religious movement?
Well, I mean, it's important, of course, just as you've done, to resist making generalizations about the Tea Party. It's such a diffuse movement, and I think it's also quite a dynamic movement. It's changing very quickly, which is much to the mystification of reporters trying to grapple with it, and also historians trying to sort of look at what we're seeing. But it seemed to me from the beginning that one of the things about its quick flare-up and its enthusiasm, I think also kind of the spine of nationally prominent charismatic figures who stir up that enthusiasm, that it structurally is quite a bit more like a religious revival than like a political movement.
But it seems to me that what you wanted to point out were the places at which the Tea Party's view of the Constitution, their Tea Party's view of, say, Thomas Jefferson's philosophy and the Constitution diverge from the actual facts. Is that correct?
Well, I think that every generation of Americans tells a different story about the American Revolution and puts it into service of its politics. That's been true since the 1780s. So I don't think that's necessarily new. But I do think, just as you say, there is something slightly different here, and that is the degree to which, certainly on the margins, there are many people within the Tea Party and around and outside the Tea Party on the far right who look to history as a kind of religion. And I think what we're seeing here entering our politics is the rise of what could be called historical fundamentalism, and that is a tendency to look to the founding era of American history and use its documents and its figures, look to them the way that religious fundamentalists look to the Bible and look to the prophets and look to Jesus. So even just to think about that question, what would the founders do? That I think maybe, you know, kind of in a common sense way, we might think comes out of jurisprudence and comes out of originalism, which is a debatable jurisprudence as a matter of legal discourse. But actually, you know, it comes out of, you know, evangelicalism. What would Jesus do? And that, I think, is a kind of crippling introduction of religion into our politics in a wholly different way, completely separate from this conversation about church and state. It's actually sort of an end run around that debate.
But it's interesting how the seeds were planted, and like the Supreme Court looks at the Federalist Papers, Jill Lepore, and trying to figure out what the intent of the framers were. And as you describe, it is a debate. You know, in Islam, they look at the Haditha, the stories of what the Prophet did, as well as at the Quran to figure out what's going on in Islam in sort of practice, in you know, sort of day-to-day life. The Federalist framers really planted these seeds by being some of the most unreligious characters in American history, but still having this messianic notion that America was a bit of historical predestination, in a sense, that it was bound to be.
I don't know that I think the framers did think that. I think what they understood the importance and the kind of epic nature of the transformations of their age that was not common to them or not exclusive to them. That was a sort of big part of the rhetoric of the Enlightenment, that the time had begun again. And so, if anything, the 18th century and the political philosophers of the 18th century who were the most eloquent on this point, their whole point was that we shouldn't be looking to the past, and that the Enlightenment was about really resisting the blind veneration of our forefathers. I mean, James Madison said in the Federalist Papers, you know, the glory of America was that we do not look to the past for our inspiration. You know, we understand the weight of history and, you know, in all matters, and so far as we think about the Constitution and how we govern ourselves, we ought to be conscious of the weight of history. But the brilliance of that political moment was, in fact, all about a break with the past. So it's one of the greater ironies of this political moment that in the guise of revering these people who were sort of opposed to reverence on principle.
Well, but how do you think that will play out in the political stage? You have a group of Tea Partiers. Some of them may make it into office. So how does that work once they get into office if they come from this anti-government and yet a founding principle stance? How does that dichotomy work in Washington?
Well, I think you're in for a very big disillusionment on all sides, because if you venerate politicians of a previous age, and we live in an era in which the politicians are the last people we're likely to venerate, the gap between one's expectations for governance and the reality of governance is going to be quite a profound one.
But, I mean, will it be transformative, perhaps? I mean, is there a way that which the Tea Party principles of the getting back to the guiding principles will then become a realistic, I guess, political effective method of transforming government?
I think at the heart of the movement, the sort of fiscal conservatism that for most ordinary people I think brings them into the Tea Party and is just basically a variety of republicanism, I think that will proceed in more or less politics as usual fashion, but with a kind of ardor that could be lead to even greater sense of impasse in our daily political affairs. Because I think, you know, if you say to me, well, I oppose this piece of legislation because I think it's bad for my district, that's one thing, and we can debate it, and I can say, well, actually, no, I think it's good for your district. In fact, whether it's bad for your district, it's still good for the country, or, you know, we can have a conversation about that. But if you say to me, I oppose this piece of legislation because it's unconstitutional, the Founding Fathers were divinely inspired, and the Constitution is holy writ, therefore everything I say, if I disagree with you, is a matter of heresy, then we're not going to have a conversation. That's the problem with this view, with this sort of historical fundamentalism.
And that's why,
as a matter of governance.
That's why you say the Tea Party movement for you is heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think it's quite sad.
Jill Lepore, professor of history at Harvard University, author of The Whites of Their Eyes, joined us from Boston. Thanks so much, Jill.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.